profit is the byproduct of everything else. So it's a little bit of a Zen view of how you make money as a company and how you get to the end that you're looking for. It's not about focusing on the profit, even though you make decisions to improve profit. It's about doing the right thing and getting processes well-defined and getting waste out of the system.
Hi everyone, I'm Elizabeth Swan.
And I'm Tracy O'Rourke.
We are from GoingSixSigma.com, and you're listening to the Just In Time Cafe podcast, where we bring you fabulous apps, polls, news, books, and people so you can build your problem-solving muscles.
I'm really happy to be spending some time with you today, Elizabeth.
Great to see you too, Tracy.
You know, they just made some cookies, so I grabbed you one.
Only one? Well, bring it, and then I'll meet you in a private dining room.
Elizabeth, that looks like a good menu. What's on it?
Okay, Tracy, here we go. For an appetizer, we'll find out how GoPro cameras are just as good for process improvement as they are for underwater photography. In the news, we'll find out how a Lean Six Sigma focus on purpose brought a materials manager into an Army Hall of Fame. For the printed page, we'll cover Karen Martin's brand new book, Clarity First, and teaches you how to clarify the five P's: purpose, priorities, process, performance, and problem solving. And for today's special, we've got your interview with Karen Martin, where you address the first P in her new book, which is purpose. It's a purpose-filled menu, Tracy. It's a lot of good things to come.
I hear you. It should be good. Remember to stay tuned for this month's coupon code in order to get a discount on GoLeanSixSigma.com's online training.
Let's get to that appetizer.
So, Elizabeth, GoPro cameras are not just for underwater photography anymore?
No. This was new to me. I got this at a workshop recently. One of our colleagues, Craig Tickle, told me that he used GoPro cameras when he was working on reducing changeover time with one of his clients. And they had a single operator, and that person was responsible for all the changeover work. And GoPro makes this harness and places the camera right at the worker's chest. They also make a headband, so you could put it on your head as well. And they had this operator strap on the harness and then turn on the camera, and they conducted the changeover just like normal business, right? It's as if you're doing a process walk and the camera was watching what was going on. And at the end, they download the video. And once they did that, they could record the time required for each step. It allowed them to make a spaghetti map of the operator's movements. And then they used the video to answer questions they had on the process and where the tools were needed. And based on their learnings, they attached a tool to the machine at each location it was needed. So that was putting the tools near the work. And that was the improvement they made, and it dropped the changeover time significantly. So it's a really cool application.
Really nice. I really like this application feature, because process walks are becoming more and more common, and with virtual environments, everybody is always asking about tools that they can use to do virtual process walks, and the GoPro camera is a great way to do it. People have been using FaceTime on their phone. People have actually just gone to GoToMeeting and have shared screens. So there's lots of ways, if you really put your mind to it, to actually get the process walk down so that people can actually see what's going on.
So if you haven't tried it and it sounds usable, GoPro cameras could be for you. I'm Elizabeth, and you're listening to the Just In Time Cafe podcast. Up next, it's Lean Six Sigma in the news. So Tracy, tell us how this problem solver ended up in this Army Hall of Fame.
Yes, I'm happy to report about John Dugan, who is at the Army Materiel Command. He was inducted into the Hall of Fame. Congratulations, John. Dugan attributes the fact that he's in the Hall of Fame to the people that have mentored him, and ultimately his skills for Lean Six Sigma, the fact that he utilized them to reduce lots of different operations that were redundant. He helped improve quality and timeliness of all their products and saved about $125 million, which is awesome, right? That gets people's attention, $125 million. But I think what's really interesting and what struck me in this article is the reference that John Dugan made many times in this article about his purpose And his mantra is really, as in his position, is to ensure the right equipment at the right time for soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines. And that's been throughout his civilian career. And that is the purpose of his position. But in actuality, he also attributes a lot of his achievement to making sure that he has had positive decisions to influence soldiers in a positive way. So even though Dugin leads a $32.9 billion operation, he never lost sight of the Army's true asset, which is the people who make up its workforce and its fighting force. Dugin says, "The question I always asked myself when I left work was, did the decisions I made today have a positive influence on soldiers?" And so ultimately, he really has a very strong sense of purpose. And so to me, he's had some amazing achievements with a clear sense of purpose.
That's a really great story. And it's a really case in point of what's coming up in our book review of Karen Martin's book. The act of being clear, or the act of getting that clarity on your purpose, makes decisions easy, right? So that he knew what his focus was. So he just would ask himself, you know, like you said, did the decisions I made today have a positive influence on soldiers? Because he knew that was exactly what he was after. So that clarity really helps people. And clearly it helped him. That's a great story.
It really is. And it's really just improving the lives of others and having a clear purpose on how you do that. You know, I think if everyone had a clear sense of purpose, they would get a lot more fulfillment out of what they do every day.
I'm with you.
I'm Tracy O'Rourke, and you're listening to the Just in Time Cafe podcast. In a short while, we'll get to hear my interview with Karen Martin, author of Clarity First. But first, let's hear a review of her new book. So, Elizabeth, you wrote a review of the Clarity First book. What did you think?
Karen Martin has written a great book for a lot of reasons. So, as you might guess from the title, her writing is direct and clear. It's a very readable book. Her approach is to address what she calls the five P's. I mentioned them earlier. You've got purpose, priorities, process, performance, and problem solving. And it's a really helpful structure. But I appreciate that she starts with purpose, right? As we're discussing, and you just referenced it, our experience is that organizations suffer at all levels from a lack of clear purpose. Organizations without a clear understanding of why they exist are not as successful as companies that have a clear statement of why they exist, and purpose can change. A few years back, a lot of you may have noticed in the news, CVS changed their purpose to helping people on their path to better health. And you may not have known that, but you probably knew what happened after that, which is that they had to stop selling cigarettes, right? If that was their purpose, then their priority had shifted and they could no longer sell cigarettes. Purpose makes priorities clear. And process improvement teams that can't articulate the reason why they're changing a process fail to engage stakeholders and they don't have as much success. So she applies the idea of seeking clarity at a macro level with organizational purpose down to something as detailed as not using acronyms, since they can lead to confusion. And this one really hit home, and I know it's going to resonate for you, Tracy, because we now have an internal rule. You're not allowed to use acronyms. And I remember before we set that rule, I saw this note, and it said, "We're creating a TPS video." And I thought, wow, I don't know how we're doing that, but Toyota Production System, that's awesome. And then it turned out that it was the Tacoma Public Schools. Now, that video is still awesome. If you haven't seen it, you should check it out. But it's not about the Toyota Production System. So her point is that even down to the words you use, you should strive for clarity. And I found myself shaking my head in agreement throughout the book because it really resonates with our approach, Tracy, because we are constantly looking for what is the clearest way to say this? What's the clearest way to teach this? What are the minimal few words to get this definition across? It's a great guide to building a problem-solving culture. And she touches on every aspect with great examples from her own work with hospitals and government and financial firms and tons more. Tracy, I know you got a lot out of this book as well.
I really did. And it's really awesome because I know Karen Martin, and it's just, I can hear her talking as I read this book. She also references Simon Sinek's Start With Why, the whole purpose of why, and that most organizations don't start with why. They start with how, or they start with what. And I think a lot of the questions she asks organizations are very provocative. And one of them is, well, what do you do? No, what do you really do? And it really makes you sit up and think about what is it that we really do in terms of our higher purpose. I got a chance to ask her why she does what she does and the work that she does, and I loved her answer. I think one of the most interesting things is that leaders do forget that it is their responsibility to be crystal clear about the purpose of an organization, and not just being crystal clear, but communicating it broadly with inspiration to everyone in the organization. That is ultimately the role and the responsibility of leaders that sometimes I don't think is taken seriously enough or done well enough for an entire organization to be inspired. So I guess that's the challenge for leaders. Visit our website and you can read the full review that Elizabeth put together because it's awesome.
So kind.
It's time to announce the coupon code.
This code is for 20% off any of our Lean Six Sigma training and certification courses. That's White Belt, Yellow Belt, Green Belt, Black Belt, and Lean Training.
And if you've joined us at the Just in Time Cafe, just use coupon code 20LUNGO. That's 20LUNGO. Who's coming up with these code names?
I know, we got to talk to Julius about this.
Use 20LUNGO during checkout. Make sure to use it soon, though, since the coupon code will expire at the end of April.
Coming up next, it's today's special. Tracy, can you give us a little preview? You have sort of hinted at a lot of what you talk about with Karen, but can you give us a little preview of your interview with Karen Martin?
Well, I will just say that if you are in the Lean community and you haven't heard of Karen Martin, you need to be catching up on some reading because Karen has written 5 books. She's won multiple Shingo prizes as an author. She is a Lean powerhouse. She's a consultant, a trainer, a keynote speaker. She has a very busy schedule. I tend to be a very busy person. And when I talk to Karen, I get exhausted just thinking about all the things that she is doing to make an impact with Lean for organizations. So today we're going to really speak to Karen about her book, Clarity First, because there's lots that we could be talking about with Karen. And ultimately, how getting clear on purpose is a key priority.
Wow. Sounds great. Looking forward to it.
You're listening to the Just in Time Cafe. I'm Tracy O'Rourke, and joining me today is my friend and colleague, Karen Martin. How are you today, Karen?
I am doing well, Tracy. How are you? Thanks for having me.
I'm so glad you were able to join us today. And I will tell our audience a little bit about you since I know you, but they might not know you, although I'd be shocked if they didn't hear about you yet. You're a 2-time Shingo Research Award-winning author. You've written 5 books, 3 of them co-authored with Mike Osterling, who is also a dear friend of ours. You're also president of the global consulting firm, the Karen Martin Group. Been in business, what, 24 years now?
Yeah, actually, we're in our 25th. We just turned the corner.
Wow, 25 years. And you look so young. When did you start? When you were 10?
Oh, flattery will get you everywhere.
Right. So I have had the pleasure of working and knowing Karen for a number of years. We both lived in San Diego, and that's kind of when I first met you. We went for coffee in La Jolla.
We did. That was a fun day.
It was. And so we've got a lot of Lean consultants types in San Diego. You, yep. Me, Mike, Jerry Wright, Sammy Obara. Lots of people.
I think a lot of it's because of the manufacturing right over the border in TJ, Tijuana. That seems to bring everyone to San Diego for Lean.
True. And, you know, San Diego's not a bad place to live.
Not too shabby. Not too shabby.
So now, unfortunately, you live in Santa Monica now.
Yes.
Well, for me, it's unfortunate.
And I'm about to go further, but we'll talk about that later.
Okay, great. So thanks for coming to the cafe to talk with me about your newest book, Clarity First. Very exciting. So did it already launch? Because I thought you had told me it's launching in March, and I don't know if you actually got an early release.
Well, the lovely thing about publishing and their processes is that their processes aren't predictable. And so it actually just started shipping 2 or 3 weeks early. So, you know, better than late, but, you know, I'm not ready.
Right.
I'm getting ready now.
Right. So this book is really about eliminating ambiguity
for leaders and organizations in order really to achieve strategic goals. So tell me, how did you come to write this book?
Yeah. So when I was writing The Outstanding Organization and focused on the four different conditions or behaviors that organizations need for outstanding performance, clarity was one of them, along with focus, discipline, and engagement. And once that book released, you kind of never know how a book's going to hit the market and what people are going to think about it. And I started getting all this feedback about the book, positive feedback. And the clarity chapter was the one that was getting far more emails, far more emotion, frankly, and just far more attention than any of the other chapters. So I figured that was, you know, one reason why I wanted to write a book to do a deeper dive on it. Mm-hmm. But then the other thing that happened after I had that inkling that I would focus on clarity at some point, then I started, you know, doing a deeper dive into Lean like I have for what, 18 years now. And the more I looked at Lean principles, practices, and tools, the more I saw that they were all geared toward improving clarity and to generating clarity. I got really excited about it because, you know, we, you and I and everybody else who does what we do experience a fair amount of resistance to Lean. And once I started realizing that clarity is at the core of it all, it started becoming more clear why people resisted, because, you know, people resist becoming clear because then you have to do something with it, with the truth. Uh-huh. And I got really excited to write the book once I put both of those kind of needs together. And that was the thing that started the baby.
Yes. And so this is the book prior to this, the precedent book was The Outstanding Organization. You did win a Shingo Award for that particular book. And yes, you said that clarity, the discussions around clarity were the ones that got you a lot of people sending you messages and emails. What kinds of things were people saying?
Well, you know, it ranged from, wow, never thought about clarity and its role in improvement and business performance, to things like, you know, thank you for raising some of these issues because I'm tired of working in ambiguity. I'm tired of not knowing what the direction is the company is going. And I'm tired of not seeing how we're actually performing and all of that. You know, I got a lot of that. And then I got one really emotional email from a guy who I had worked with at a previous client. He was this, you know, kind of big, burly guy, you know, not real given to showing emotion on his sleeve. And he said he actually cried while he was reading the book because he finally realized that what was causing him and his whole department and company to not perform well. And it was this lack of clarity and this deep fear that the organization had around learning the truth. And it was a pretty emotional email. It's to this day, it has stuck with me.
Wow. Well, I think that's a really nice tribute to what you're putting out into the universe, really, and people coming back and getting a response from that. And it reminds me, you know, in this new book, you spend a good part of the book thinking about sharing the barriers that get in the way of clarity, things like ignorance, time constraints, and fear. And you just mentioned fear was recognition. He had recognition that there was fear in the organization. So are there any of those that you listed in the book that you find are the most pervasive within organizations in terms of getting in the way of clarity?
Well, I actually believe that fear is at the core of all of those, even biases and assumptions, even lack of humility and lack of curiosity, which are big barriers. They all kind of drill down to fear. I didn't go as far down that fear path as I wanted to, partly because there was a lot of content to cover and you have a page count max, you know, with your publishing contracts, but partly because, you know, I just was a little afraid, a little afraid that if I went too deep into fear, it would actually turn people off because it gets deeply psychological. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to stay practical because that's kind of what I'm known for is the practical side of things. But I didn't want to be silent on it because it's a big deal. Fear is a very big deal and it's prevalent, pervasive, and it's, you know, it's in our way.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, you mentioned practical, being a P. And in your book, this book, you organize your work by the five P's: purpose, priorities, process, performance, and problem solving. And I'm not going to let you give away the store about all of those things, but I do know that you believe purpose is the most important out of all of these. Can you tell us a little bit about why you think it's the most important?
Yeah. So purpose to me is something that organizations have struggled with for a long time, in large part because we've gotten all kind of tangled up with the whole mission, vision, and values, operating principles, and things like that. And purpose has been, I think, the quiet one. And it was Simon Sinek that really, you know, started kind of grabbing my heart and saying, like, it's all about purpose. And when you get down to the end of the day, our lives on the earth are all about purpose. And when you find that purpose and you get clear about it, then it drives everything from that point forward. And you can, you know, stay more true to mission, and you can get higher results and all that if you understand what your purpose for even being on the earth is. Companies have an equal need. They've got to understand it's not about the product that they're, or the service that they're, you know, providing. It's about why they're providing it. And when you get people rallied around that why, it not only is a much more stimulating environment for people to work in, because it's not just about, you know, I call it the noun versus the verb. It's not about the noun of what you do. It's about why you do it. And so it's been fascinating to start challenging leaders to answer the question, why do you do what you do? And they can't answer it. I mean, most leaders cannot answer it quickly and unequivocally. Most leaders can't do it. And it's fascinating to me that we're so blind to why we do what we do.
Yes, Simon Sinek, I saw his TED Talk and his book. I read his book, Start With Why. And I think
I love that book.
I do too. And it really does, you know, everybody starts with the what. Here's what we do. And they don't really spend time talking about the why. And that's the inspirational part. That's the part that is emotional. And I guess one question I have is, leaders do confuse purpose and vision. What do you think is the difference between the two? Why do you think they get tangled up?
Well, vision to me is still what, but a good vision will be very tied to purpose, even if it's not explicit. But to me, a vision is still like, what do you want to be doing? When do you want to be doing it? To whom do you want to be doing it to, you know, or with, you know, those, it's still what. And so the purpose is why. And the companies that perform the best, I mean, if you look at Toyota, if you look at Google, if you look at Amazon, they are very, very clear on purpose, you know, and their purpose is why they do what they do. So in the case of Toyota, they're very clear that it's about, you know, getting people from point A to point B safely in a car that doesn't break the bank, you know, a reliable car, high quality and all that stuff. It's about movement of people. It's not about the car. It's about movement of people. And if you look at Amazon, I'm sorry, let me go to Google. You know, Google is about connecting the world through information and helping people get power through information. And so it's not about the search engine. It's about giving people information so they can be more powerful and they can survive and thrive as human beings. And so, and I can go on and on about, you know, every company has a purpose. And even if you make something kind of, you know, more mundane, like, you know, some kind of widget connector thing in manufacturing, you know, what the purpose of that could be, that it helps make people safer in using a product, or in employees doing a job if it's a B2B type of product. You know, it's, there's, you got a mind for it, but it's powerful when you find it.
Why do you do what you do, Karen? What drives you?
You know, okay, so there's two things. One is, I have long believed that we spend a lot of hours at work, and that work simply does not have to be as hard as we make it. And I say we because I do think that we collectively make work difficult. It doesn't have to be that hard. It shouldn't be that hard. And similarly, so that's the effort part of it. But similarly, I do believe that because we spend so much time at work, that we should go to work and be incredibly fulfilled by what we do and look for that job that helps you become fulfilled and become the greatest version of yourself. Everything that companies do that doesn't help them perform at high levels is also, it's also the same things that make employees frustrated, that lead to turnover, that make your days more complicated than they need to be, you know. And so when companies tap into the power that they've got to perform at high levels, they're also tapping into the thing they need to make a work environment that really fulfills people. And at the end of the day, yes, I want companies to perform well. Yes, I want shareholders to be happy. Yes, I want companies to be able to grow and provide more for the communities and the people they serve. But at the end of the day, I want leaders to be able to sleep at night. I want people that are there in the front lines to be able to be fulfilled and grow through their jobs. And I want people to be able to contribute in a way that, you know, helps them grow and develop as human beings. And that's what drives me.
That's wonderful. I think the issue we really do face is finding that purpose. I agree with you. I love what I do right now.
Yeah.
I have a lot of pride in what I do, and it feels good, and it's very fulfilling, and it's really trying to just make it easy for everyone everywhere to build their problem-solving muscles.
Yeah.
So my question is this, and you've probably heard this quite a bit, when you start to push leaders on their purpose and people say, well, we're here to make a profit. In your book, you write, profit is not your purpose. Can you tell us a little bit more about this statement?
Yeah, when I hear a leader say that, and I've heard, you know, a lot of leaders over the years say that, when I hear a leader say that, it immediately tells me that they're a superficial thinker and that they're also not really looking at providing value to customers. They're looking at some other more superficial and, you know, in my view, not as important part of why they do what they do. The thing that's cool about profit, so I am a big believer in profit. Let me just say that. The more money companies make, ultimately, the better it can be for them, even nonprofits, because you need to reinvest new equipment, better people, you know, larger facilities. I mean, there's all that. You have to have capital to do all that. But profit is the byproduct of everything else. So it's a little bit of a Zen view of how you make money as a company and how you get to the end that you're looking for. It's not about focusing on the profit, even though you make decisions to improve profit. It's about doing the right thing and getting processes well defined and getting waste out of the system and getting the right job fit for people, getting the right pricing on a product, all getting the right product that the market wants. There's all that that then results in profit. So you need to focus more on the operational why, and then you'll get the profit you're looking for. So you get it, you know, in a roundabout way and in a more humanistic way.
Yes. And as leaders, I think it's very challenging if you tell everyone in the organization, well, we're here to make money. So go out there and make some money for us. I mean, that just doesn't sound very fulfilling.
Yeah. It
feels a little empty. It feels a little superficial, like you mentioned. And so it feels a lot better when you can say, well, we're here to save lives as opposed to just making money.
Right. Right. And I think, you know, we want to be careful not to put lipstick on a pig. And when I have had leaders when I talk about purpose and, you know, they've come out with the, well, we're here to make money. And I help them understand that that's, you know, not necessarily the most helpful way of viewing their purpose. Every once in a while, I'll find someone that just says what they think they should say, but they don't really believe it. They still believe they're there to make money. Mm-hmm. And so you have to be careful that you really grasp the deeper meaning of work and the deeper meaning of serving and the deeper meaning of providing value in order to really embrace that shift in thinking about profit.
Yes. And that's a great point, because if you really don't believe it as a leader, it comes across as very disingenuous.
Yep.
And then you've lost credibility in your organization as well. So getting started on clarity, I'm going to believe that people are going to want to read your book because they recognize that they need more clarity in their organizations. And you talk about three questions to help them get started. What do you do? What do you really do? And why do you do it? So tell us more about these questions and why they're so important.
Yeah, thanks for asking that, because it seems like a very basic differentiation, but it's actually pretty tricky to get people clear on what the differentiation is. So the what do you do is the product. So I mean the good or the service that you provide, and that's usually very easy for people, at least at the leadership level, to answer. Sometimes the front lines don't know the full range of products, but the leaders know. What do you really do is about solving a customer problem. And so it's taking that product definition a little deeper, and we're getting closer to purpose, by the way, by looking at, you know, what specific gap or problem does that close for a customer? Does it solve for a customer? And getting clear on that. And that actually, answering that question really helps product development, for example. It helps marketing. It helps everybody understand the, you know, and start adopting a problem-seeking, problem-solving mindset, which is helpful in all kinds of ways. The why do you do it is, why does that problem matter over another problem? You know, whoever founded the company, why did they choose to close that gap over other gaps? And that gives you a very good clue into what your purpose is. It's not still the purpose, but, you know, it gets you very close to it. And then you're only a step away from defining the purpose.
And which of these do you think is the hardest for organizational leaders to answer?
The last one, the why do you do it? You know, I actually just had an example with an automotive parts manufacturer that is a really solid leader, good thinker, he has a good lean mindset, the whole bit. And we were on the phone for 20 minutes and he still didn't get to the why. And so he now has homework. And I can't wait to talk with him when I get back from Asia to see if he got it. We are indoctrinated and we are almost brainwashed into being product centric. And so it takes a while to break that.
Mm-hmm. So in the book, what caught my eye in particular, well, the whole book is great, but the topic that you talk about that I really think is very interesting and often gets missed is this topic of catchball. Can you give our listeners some insight into what that is and why it's so important to do?
Yes, I love catchball, and it's very difficult to execute well. So catchball is the process typically known in the strategy deployment Hoshin Kanri world, where once priorities are being decided, defined by leaders, instead of just passing them down in a cascade fashion like we did in the 80s and 90s, you are basically asking with humility and curiosity the next level in the organization, what do you think about these priorities? How do you see what our work needs to be for the next fiscal year, typically? It could be mid-year, but usually it's a fiscal year. You know, what do you think? And then you humbly listen to the answers that people give you about, I'm curious about that one. I actually think that this is more important because we're hearing from our customers, blah, 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 blah. And it's the image of tossing a ball back and forth through conversation, which takes a bit of time. So this isn't something that you do in one day. And then companies that get really, really good at this are able to play catch ball all the way down. And I'm using a hierarchical org chart in my mind, which most organizations are, not all, but most. And you can take it all the way down to the front lines. When you get to that level of maturity and can do it, and not many have, then you've got everyone in the organization bought into the priorities by the time you get them set because everyone has had a voice. Now, I don't mean like a deep voice, but there's been a process to getting everyone's perspective. And so then it's easier to stick with the priorities. It's easier to avoid organizational ADD, as I call it. Mm-hmm. And everyone is much more closely aligned with mission and why, purpose. And so it's a beautiful thing. What happens is leaders fall prey to the old cascading style of, here's what we think. Now, what are you going to do to support this? And then that level, here's what we're going to do. Now, what are you going to do to support this? It's not a conversation.
Right.
Yeah. Catchball is very different from cascading goals.
Yes. And ultimately, people feel much closer, more connected to something they helped create, right? I mean, that's right. Kind of the point of this is people can really get behind it because they were sort of part of the creation of that,
right?
Those missions, right. The visions, the goals.
Yeah, and I have not had the luxury of being with a client long enough through I'd like to see someone through 5 cycles of this, and everyone needs help for the first couple, and then they go, hey, we got this. I'd love to see someone for 5 years go through it, because my hypothesis is that if they also embrace a lot of Gemba leadership and they're in the Gemba a lot, then the disconnect between the different levels will narrow and be less, and so there won't need to be as many provocative conversations back and forth about, well, wait a minute, I see it this way. I think these should be our priorities, because leaders will be much more in the know about what's really happening with the direct value being provided to customers. And so there won't be such a disconnect. The first year is very tough because there are significant disconnects between the different levels in the organization and their views.
Mm-hmm. Well, darn it, Karen, I wish I could have another cup of coffee with you, because I feel like we just ripped through that cup of coffee very quickly. So just to wrap up, do you have any special interests as of late, where you're spending your time, or special interests that are just piquing your curiosity these days?
I keep going back to process management and process design, and we're working with a pretty long engagement right now where, it's just so wickedly difficult to get the organization to understand. You can't just verbally say what your process is. It has to be documented. There needs to be someone managing it. You need to have performance indicators that are being constantly monitored, and, you'll get little tiny pockets where people get it, and then you go into a new area and you have to resell the concept all over again. It's just fascinating to me how difficult it is for organizations to understand the value of standard work and job aids and visual management and all those things that it takes to have a well-oiled machine. So I'm wrestling with the psychology of all that and why is that, and trying to figure out how to help in a more profound way.
Yeah, I run into that too. It's really interesting how every organization has clear org charts, but you don't see a lot of process charts that are high level to say, here's our value streams, or here's what our core processes are. It kind of blows my mind, actually.
It does. And when you have at the leadership level, no one person that can actually describe the delivery of value from order to delivery, that's not a good thing. And that is what exists because the people don't have clearly defined value streams and clearly defined processes. And new hires go on board and they have this, you know, really bumpy onboarding because there's nothing that's standardized. And we could go on and on. I do want another cup of coffee with you.
Great. So anything else you want to share with our audience today?
I just think that we're blessed. Most of your listeners, I assume, do what we do. And I think, you know, we're blessed with a way of helping the world that a lot of people don't possess. You know, process work and organizational performance improvement and management consulting, all that stuff. It is not for the faint of heart and it's not easy. And I think that sometimes, you know, I talk with consultants that get really beaten down because it's hard work. But man, oh man, you know, when you think about what we're actually doing, we're saving jobs because if companies aren't performing well, they're going to lay off because that's what they do. And we're making lives of individuals that are trying to deliver value to customers better. And we're helping leaders sleep at night. And yes, oh yes, we're helping them make profit. You know, it's a blessing to be able to do this work. And I hope that everyone views it that way that does this work, because it, you know, it does get hard at times.
It does. And I agree with you. I feel very blessed. It is hard work. And, you know, it's kind of saddens my heart a little bit when people view process improvement as painful and they don't want to have anything to do with it. They are just so missing the good things about this work. And so I absolutely agree with you. And so you are going to be making a major move out of California, I hear. And so tell us a little bit about that.
You know, I am moving to Dallas, and I've been in California since 1980, from Pennsylvania originally. Never thought I'd leave. My mom is getting older, and I feel like I want to get closer to her. I'm getting a little tired of California prices, and I just decided to go for it. And I'm really excited for this new chapter.
Oh, and Dallas is going to be very happy to have you. And if our listeners, any of our listeners are not in Dallas, where can people find you?
Our website is ksmartin.com. That's S as in Sue, ksmartin.com. And social media is at Karen Martin OpEx on Twitter. And then Facebook is Karen Martin Group, you know, Facebook.com/ Karen Martin Group, and LinkedIn Karen Martin OpEx.
Yeah. And I might just add that just Google Karen Martin. She's everywhere. But we do actually ask that if people want more specific information. So I want to thank you, Karen, for joining me today at the Just In Time Cafe. I really appreciate it. It's always a pleasure talking with you and working with you. I can't wait until we get to work together again on something.
Well, thank you, Tracy. Yes, that last project was really fun that we did. So more of that to come.
Yes. And I want to thank our listeners for joining as well. Don't forget to subscribe to the Just In Time Cafe on iTunes or listen to more podcasts and visit us at goleansixsigma.com/podcast to share your feedback with us. Thanks a lot, Karen.
Thank you so much, Tracy. This was really great fun. Good questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Tune into success story Darlene Schluter and Kimberly Epperson's process improvement. They went from 27 steps to only 7. And this is related to students doing events on campus at UC San Diego. And boy, is it going to be a lot easier for you to do this event and get it registered now that they've improved that process. Also, check out this month's Tools and Concepts webinar, Introduction to DMAIC. It's a great primer, or maybe a refresher, on DMAIC. And also, tune in to our next podcast episode when I interview Angela Cook. She runs the Lean Six Sigma training program over at UC San Diego. You don't want to miss that.
Thanks for joining us for another Java-filled episode of the Just In Time Cafe.
See you in 2 weeks.